Victoria Woodhull, spiritualist, suffragist, free lover, and in her time, the most famous woman in the United States. In 1872, she ran for president. By the time of her death, she'd been nearly erased from history. Until now. Welcome to UMO Ensemble's Vic, the life and times of Victoria C. Woodhull, future presidentess. Episode 5. Free love.
Grant what women ask. We shall create our own country.
We mean treason.
We mean secession.
We mean treason.
And on a thousand
we mean
times
secession.
Grander scale than
and
that
we
on
mean
a thousand
secession.
Times grander
we
scale
will
than
overthrow
that of
this bogus
we
mean
republic
we
and plant a government of
secession.
Righteousness
we
in its stead.
We mean
we mean treason.
Oh, yes.
We mean secession.
After they denied your petition. Aunt Tenny told me you were fiery that night.
They said I was rough.
What?
Rough around the edges.
You were brilliant, Mama.
Isabella Beecher.
The nice Beecher. I remember her visiting us in London. She smelled so lovely.
She tried to tutor me.
Tutor you?
On being ladylike.
Ladylike?
Improving my penmanship.
No.
Not speaking so loudly. I was...
What?
A lost cause. A lost cause. We will overthrow this bogus republic and plant a government of righteousness in its stead.
One of your finest hours, madam.
No thanks to you. I do not wish to continue speaking with a member of the press.
I was simply doing my job.
How many of history's sins have been explained away by that sentence?
I was as kind as I was able to be.
No excuses, sir. We are well past that.
Yes, I hope that...
I know you continue writing about me, and I did not like a word of it.
I would that I could change it, but I am not quite as adept at the alteration of my past as you.
What?
In the interest of time, madam, I suggest you return to your story. There was quite a bit of hubbub following your extraordinary speech, wasn't there?
There was hubbub every time I said anything.
Indeed. This one, however, seemed to significantly rile your detractors.
Do not bring them into it.
I assume you mean the...
Yes, the loathsome Beecher family.
The Beecher family of New England was full of religious, educated, and determined individuals, including...
Hypocrites.
Including Mrs. Harriet Beecher Stowe, author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, the good Reverend Henry Ward Beecher, supporter of abolition and suffrage.
Both of whom hated me, along with the ancient Catherine and every other sibling, for all I know.
Except for the lovely-smelling Isabella.
Do not attempt to cheer me, sir.
Of course not. I realize this next section may anger you, but in preparation for what is to come, we must begin
yes,
with...
Yes, yes, yes. Get it over with.
Following the dismissal of your petition to Congress, you nearly set the stage alight at Lincoln Hall. And now, Miss Catherine Beecher shares the news of your treasonous call with her brother Henry.
Henry, have you read this? She said these things in Lincoln Hall, in front of goodness knows how many innocent ears. The gall of her!
She certainly is an ambitious thing. Do you know she's written to me? Wants to meet me. Everyone does, but still.
She wants to tear society completely asunder. After everything this country has been through, it is more than grotesque. It is a travesty.
Sister, calm down. She can't do any harm. They're the current fascination. I can't for the life of me understand why, but the winds shall soon blow another way. They're being sued, you know. Some poor little lamb invested $500 and lost it all.
Our own sister Isabella is cheering her on. Woodhull and that trampy Tennessee are making forays into society, Henry.
Which will turn around and laugh at her as loudly as they have cheered. Mark my words.
I trust you are correct. She is a Jezebel.
She dares call me a Jezebel?
She's an old hag.
With a brother, an actual adulterer?
We don't know that.
But Mrs. Stanton
And
is...
it won't do a lick of good until we do.
She is against everything we stand for.
Yes, that she is.
Then let's address that, for God's sake.
Can do. I shall transcribe. Speak her mind.
Not about Jezebel. Stay focused.
I am always focused.
On the vote and on equality.
Ladies, please.
Right. I cherish a hope, with all that is Christian in my heart, that one day soon Miss Catherine Beecher may be filled with shame for her unholy position that seeks to deprive woman of her legal right to vote.
Good.
Let us not forget, she enjoys a most enviable existence. Although an aging spinster, she lives in lavish comfort thanks to the wealth willed to her upon her beloved father's demise. What of the poor woman who cannot survive, not unless she remains in bondage to a husband or father who is less than beloved, who is cruel or depraved?
Yes.
Let Miss Beecher and those of her ilk choose to lick the dirt from the feet of their oppressors if they wish, but let them not dare to interfere with the grand, sublime, intelligent majority of women who prefer freedom to oppression and who demand the full rights of American citizenship.
Yes!
When you are angry, you are glorious.
Ooh, felt glorious. We can print it, right?
I say we goddamn can and should.
Agreed.
Then onward.
Henry, have you seen this horror?
What horror is that, sister?
That woman's paper.
The Woodhull and Claflin Weekly. Really, Catherine?
Look at what she has written about me.
Oh, does anyone read that thing?
Stop being thick, Henry. More people are reading it every day.
Don't you mean every week?
Mark my words. She is dangerous. And Harriet and I are going to silence her. We have crafted some letters of our own to share with newspapers far more respectable and with far more readers than this piece of garbage.
As you wish.
April 1871. A war of words erupts. Readers everywhere have been titillated, aghast, or both at the recent battle of letters between Sisters Beecher and Beecher Stowe versus Woodhull and Claflin. The most recent bombshell comes from Mrs. Woodhull, who dispatched this shocking statement to the New York Times.
I know of one man, a public teacher of eminence who lives in concubinage with the wife of another public teacher of almost equal eminence.
Readers everywhere are simply dying to know, who precisely is she talking about? And what impact will this battle have on the strangest campaign by the most unusual candidate anyone has ever known?
Mrs. Stanton, have you seen this latest salvo?
I have.
What are we going to do about it?
Nothing to be done, Susan.
You know I am grateful for the attention she has brought our cause, but this
Catherine
is beyond
Beecher is a relic.
Of course she is, but that doesn't...
Let it rest, Susan.
Mrs. Woodhull's overweening ambition also concerns me. This ludicrous presidential quest is more than quixotic. It draws attention from our cause.
She is drawing people to our cause. Susan, let her B.
May 2nd, 1871. The National Women's Suffrage Association meets at New York City's Apollo Hall. The streets outside are nearly impassable as hundreds of carriages deliver thousands of individuals, all assembled for the cause of suffrage and a keynote address by the woman everyone in New York wants to hear.
My esteemed colleagues and advocates of suffrage, thank you. I begin tonight with an answer to the question I am posed so often of late. What was I thinking when I made the decision to enter the political universe? I confess, I was not thinking at all. I was moved, nay, compelled, by the forces that call upon us all to transform our world. From the moment I began this journey, I have held strong to the beliefs which pressed me into your service. I have advocated radical political action
I have presented myself seriously as a candidate for president. For this, I am painted with shades of hubris and immodesty. I am charged with having unwarrantable ambition. But I say to you now, I am not and have never been ambitious for myself. I am ambitious for my country. My platform includes principles founded in the value of humanity as a whole, a workday limited to 8 hours, not 12 or more. I call for national public education, welfare, and assistance for the poor, abolition of the death penalty.
And free love.
To that, sir, let me say simply that any government I may lead shall not be permitted to interfere with the rights of adult individuals to pursue happiness as they may choose. And now I shall turn the podium over to the other esteemed speakers here tonight. Onward and upward!
That went well, I thought.
I was distracted.
Why go to trial, James? It's ridiculous.
I must take a stand.
The judge already said he dismissed the complaint my mother filed against
they
you.
They are
and
a burden on you.
We do not need more unfavorable
no
news.
No one will pay attention.
They all have their knives out.
Well, we have our own paper to combat them. As long as we can afford the...
Oh, stop worrying
our
about
our advertisement
that.
Sales are dropping.
I have seen the future, James.
Did you see where more money might come from?
There are citizens beyond those with immense wealth.
But
if Vanderbilt tires of us, we have earned a war chest of goodwill. We have Mr. Marx wishing to call upon us, don't we?
Herr Marx, yes,
he can strengthen us with the workers.
If you publish his manifesto.
Which makes sense. We both hold his views in high regard.
Well, perhaps Herr Marx can tutor me in how a society over in a matter of months with no money.
I'm tired, James.
Conveniently tired, of course. As soon as it's time to think strategically.
Your hesitations are tedious.
The Beechers are out for you.
Leave them to me. I've been thinking of how to manage them. I shall make the acquaintance of Theodore Tilton.
Ah, the young and handsome Mr. Tilton.
The close friend and confidant of the good Reverend Beecher, and one sympathetic to our ideals.
Right.
Theo...
Who?
Theodore Tilton.
Oh, yes.
You remember him?
He seemed 8 feet tall, and he looked like an angel.
Yes. He was supposed to help. James, so stupid.
What?
The trial at ammunition.
I don't...
They ruined it.
Mama.
No one listened. Not to what was important, just all the... I hate them.
Stop.
No, you have to listen to them. You have to know.
Mama, I cannot hear the voices that are inside your mind.
You're not trying.
I have tried.
What?
I can't. I don't have that inside of me. Not the way you do.
May 6th, 1871. Extra, extra. The Woodhull headed to trial. Presidential candidate's mother sues son-in-law. Vanderbilt's protege hauled into court. Good God, can that woman sell papers? The courtroom is abuzz as the Claflin Woodhull clan descends en masse, along with a veritable array of New Yorkers, all hoping to catch a glimpse of the notorious Victoria and Akin.
Order! Order! I call order in the court. Who brings this complaint before the court today?
I do.
Please state your name.
I am Van Anna Claflin, often called Roxy.
And I'm her better half.
Can I tell my story now?
Reuben Buck Claflin, but I've gone by many
names. Yes, ma'am. You, sir, be quiet.
Well, you tell him, Mama.
Yeah, you tell him.
Hush up, Utica.
Quiet, both of you. Mrs. Claflin, if you please.
Judge, my daughters were good daughters till they got in with this man's blood.
Mr. Blood, the defendant.
He is one of those who has no bottoms in his pockets. He ruins my daughter's love for their mama, and he steals all their money. If they would only send this bad man away, they would be millionaireses.
Mm-hmm.
Love of God.
Silence.
Yes, silence the bad man.
Judge, please do not take this complaint seriously.
I am afraid for my life, all the time. And I call heaven to witness. Judge, there is the worst gang of free lovers in that house that ever lived.
What?
No,
what's that?
Free lovers, all of them.
Indeed. Thank you, Mrs. Claflin.
What? I'm all done?
Yes. Sit down, please. Now, Mrs. Claflin. Mr. Blood, what say you?
Colonel Blood.
Colonel.
I have never used violence with my mother-in-law, Judge. I would, however, like to note that her interference in our financial and political endeavors is extraordinary, not to mention the toll she and her relatives take of my wife.
Did you make any threat to Mrs. Claflin?
Of course not.
In her sworn complaint, she states that you threatened her with bodily harm, sir.
It wasn't a serious statement.
What precisely did you say, sir?
Is extremely troublesome, disturbing the rest my wife sorely requires. I said that if she was not my mother-in-law, I would turn her over my knee and spank her.
I was afraid for my life!
I was too, Daddy.
For God's sake, Judge, they are all insane.
That's not what it is. Why don't you come down here? Why don't you come over here?
Order! Colonel Blood, if you will recall, I was willing to dismiss Mrs. Claflin's complaint as a somewhat ridiculous family dispute.
Huh? Was that?
I was terrified.
However, you wish to meet the complaint in court.
To clear my name, sir.
Colonel Blood, when were you married to Mrs. Woodhull?
Excuse me?
In what year did you marry your current wife, sir?
1866.
And were you divorced from your first wife, sir?
Of course. Eventually.
Was Mrs. Woodhull divorced when you married her? Remember, you're in a court of law, sir.
I don't know.
The man doesn't even know when he was married.
Colonel Blood, how frequently do you see your wife's first husband, Dr. Canning Woodhull?
I see him every... We live in the same house.
That's madness. That's pure madness.
Indeed. Order! Court shall be adjourned until tomorrow, and Mrs. Victoria Woodhull, not Mrs. Blood, is that correct?
Woodhull is her chosen name.
When Mrs. Woodhull and Miss Claflin shall take the stand.
Claflin Blood Trial, Day 2. The streets outside the courtroom are a-crush with people desperate for a seat inside. Physicians and lawyers, cooks and chambermaids, young gentlemen of leisure, all press against railings and stand on benches in their eagerness to see the heroines of the hour. Neatly attired in black silk suits with jaunty hats setting off their abbreviated curls, the ladies in question sail boldly into the arena.
Mrs. Victoria Woodhull, please take the stand.
Remember that.
Mrs. Woodhull.
Judge, if I may interject a plea to your compassion and entreat you with utmost respect, please disregard my mother's erroneous statements of yesterday and in her original complaint. She is not well. Due to her mental and emotional instability, my brokerage firm covers all of her expenses.
What is she saying?
You be nice to your mama, Vicky.
She is not nice at all, Dad.
Order!
No, she is not, I gotta say.
As I was saying, my parents and siblings reside with me, and my firm pays for all of their...
Mrs. Woodhull.
Judge?
How long has your first husband lived with you and your second husband?
Excuse me?
Since when?
1865.
Your entire marriage?
I see, Judge. It's a certain
thing. She takes good care of me.
What's
Vicky
that?
Does.
Who are you?
Oh, why me? Well, I reckon I'm Vicky's husband.
Order! Order in the court!
Post-trial, we find the Woodhull-Claflin Blood Brigade still standing, but clearly battered by the revelations brought forth. The complaint against Colonel Blood has been dismissed. However, damage to the Woodhull reputation seems to be only growing, with reports of a past both unsavory and questionable coming to light. Was Patriarch Reuben Buck Claflin guilty of mail theft and fraud in Homer, Ohio? Did Sisters Woodhull and Claflin operate earlier institutions offering more than spiritual healing? In a matter of weeks, whispered rumor and sly innuendo have grown into a chorus louder than frogs in springtime.
Oh, Henry, she's even worse than I realized. Even the papers who are remotely sympathetic tell of an abhorrent and immoral existence.
There's still a paper that's sympathetic, even remotely.
Listen to this about that awful husband.
Which husband?
The drunken one. Just listen. Mrs. Woodhull's first marriage was difficult. After two difficult births, she was thrust into sole supporters as her husband was beset by a nervous condition which drove him to drink.
I imagine she did that all by herself.
Because of her husband's condition, Victoria supported her family by working as an actress. An actress, Henry! Dear Lord!
This will be her last escapade, mark my words, and not a moment too soon.
Come. Oh, I'm sure glad to see you. It's been ever so long.
I'm glad, too.
I've missed you, you old goat. What kept you away?
Well, I ended up having to take care of some family business, Sparrow.
And it made you gloomy? How's that old back of yours?
Oh, my back's all right. But I am a mite gloomy. I can't keep a darn thing secret from you, can I?
A secret? Let me see. I'm not always right, you know. I'm getting a strange feeling from you, and it's sad, I can tell. But what's causing it is a little blurry.
Remember when my oldest son was aggravating me something awful?
I sure do. You were wound up like a cuckoo clock. Did he do something?
Well, I got married, Sparrow.
What?
I had to get married to an old respectable thing. My doggone son was threatening to take over. Said he'd tell people I wasn't in my right mind if I... Well, if I...
If you kept seeing me.
I sure am sorry, Sparrow.
Yeah. Me too, Calm.
Oh, Tenny, good. You're... Tell me what you think of this.
I'm tired.
To the readers of the New York Times, because I am a woman, because I conscientiously hold opinions different...
I'm tired, Vicky.
No, listen here. Good part. I shall not be made a scapegoat by those who divert attention to their own iniquity. Fingers at me. Many of my self-appointed critics are themselves soiled by the vices they condemn.
I'm going to bed.
I advocate free love in the highest, purest sense. Listen, Tenny.
I don't want to listen.
My critics preach against free love openly while they practice.
That is a hot one, and I am tired, Vicky.
Tenny, what's wrong?
I'm going to bed.
I will burn down the hypocrites where they stand.
Mama, free love?
What?
You called for free love.
I did not.
Just now.
You said you couldn't hear them.
I can hear you. You called out, I advocate for free love.
That wasn't, it wasn't.
You wouldn't let me get married.
What?
You made me promise to never marry, not until...
You did not need that.
Mama!
All those wealthy girls, painted and dressed up and paraded about for the highest bidder, worse than prostitutes.
I was an adult, on my own in New York.
Far too alone. You were supposed to have chaperones.
I was 34 years old. I was running our magazine. And I loved him, Mama.
He wanted your money, my money.
He loved me.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do.
Zulu,
Where are you going?
To get some air.
But I need... I mean... Zulu?
Vic, The Life and Times of Victoria C. Woodhull, Future Presidentess, continues with Episode 6, Mrs. Satan. Written by Maria Glanz, directed by Elizabeth Klobe, with sound design by James Bigby Garver. For a full list of participating artists and future broadcasts, please visit UMO Ensemble at www.umo.org. Thank you to the National Endowment for the Arts, For Culture, Norcliffe Foundation, Horizons Foundation, and generous private donors.